Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. I'm your host, Emily Francis. We have the fabulous producer, Jay, on the line with us, who makes this show go around. I hope you guys are enjoying your introduction into the springtime, as the time has changed and the sun is shining a little earlier in the morning and helping us move about, hopefully, even though it's a little bit hard to get used to. It is just a signal that spring is on the rise right now, and we can embrace it and feel joyful because this is when new growth comes around. I notice it now living in the Mediterranean more than ever, and I really am grateful to be in harmony with Mother Nature and to see how things grow and bloom. All right, we have a really cool guest on today, and it's different than most of our guests from healing. But I wanted to bring it on because I do think it's an important topic. We have the author of the book, Comedy Goes to Court. Comedy Goes to Court, When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. And the commentary, too, is from bad contracts to partner blowups to the limitations of free speech, comments on boarding or defamation. We have guests. Carl Unegbu, and he is the author of this and the lawyer behind the book. So, Carl, thank you for coming. Welcome to All About Healing.
Thank you so much. I am honored to be here.
So, where do you live?
Actually, I live in New York City, Manhattan. So,
and you're a lawyer that deals with this exact conversation?
Well, I wrote the book. I cover comedy. Well, I'm a lawyer, and I also studied journalism. I went to journalism school, and I was an editor of a website. We covered comedy for over 10 years, so that's how my foray into comedy began. But, so I cover comedy as a journalist, and then I also happen to be a lawyer, so I'm able to intersect, you know, both worlds with respect to comedy.
So there's a lot of things happening right now where there are a lot of lawsuits and a lot of things on defamation. So can we start very, very basic? Can you please explain to the listeners what a defamation lawsuit would be, what would constitute defamation?
Oh, well, thanks. I'm glad you should ask. So, yeah, defamation is just very simply a claim that somebody has defamed the other. In other words, you have said something about the other person that is false. And because it's false, it has reduced the person's reputation in the community. So a defamation lawsuit is about claiming damages for a ruined reputation in society.
And What would bring someone to court over that? Basically, it would really defame their name, their reputation. But what kind of, what are the things that it would have to be to, in order to bring it to the lawsuit? Like, would it have to be in writing? Would it have to be on film? Or could this happen where you don't have true record that somebody has defamed your character?
Defamation, there are two major aspects. It could be something you wrote. In other words, that would be libel, or something you said, which would be slander. But in each case, it has to involve making a false statement of fact. You see, a statement of fact is not every statement that qualifies as a statement of fact. A statement of fact is something like, you said something happened, And if it didn't happen, then that's a whole other thing. If it happens to be false and it damages somebody's reputation, then that will be defamation in the law. So whether,
and
what
do you work with?
If it's something you said, then it will be slander, like I said before. But if you write it down, yeah, that would be libel. So that's sort of how it works. But it has to be a statement of fact, not a statement of opinion. If you say you believe that somebody, let's say you say a politician, you know, doesn't fulfill their promise, that's like an opinion. All right? But if you say somebody stole something yesterday at a bookstore or at a grocery store, that's a statement of fact. If it's false, if it happens to be false, then that's defamation right there. I don't know if you understand the difference the distinction I just made.
So your book is exactly for comedy. So how did you get connected to the world of comedy?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I started the first foray I made into comedy was when I was going to school at Columbia. I was studying journalism. And so we had this, because when you go to school, when you are in the program, they assign you a beat. So my beat was here in New York City, in Harlem. So the idea was to go and cover stories every week in that beat. So that was my first foray into covering comedy officially. So I went into a comedy club. You know, it was a night when they were having a show, lots of folks gathered. So yes, I covered the comedy acts that were going on that day. And then I wrote about it for school. But then I went back and did more coverage. But that was it. So when I graduated and then I was out there working, so friends of mine came and told me, they suggested that we maybe start a website, a new site that covers comedy. So it kind of like rekindled my interest in comedy, and that was how we began to do that. So we launched a website called Comedy Beat. Comedy Beat, and I was the editor for a very long time, as well as a reporter. So we did that for a while, and that was where my interest in comedy began, in New York City. So since then, I've been involved in making commentaries on comedy and writing about comedy.
Wow. But you yourself, like, you've never tried to be a comedian, is that right?
No. I don't practice comedy, no. But I write about comedy. I make commentaries about comedy, and I hang out a lot with comedians. So
what are some of the topics covered in your book?
Yeah, so the book, first of all, was based on my blog. I was blogging about comedy while I was a comedy editor and reporter. I was writing a blog on the side devoted to comedy topics. And I began to notice that comedy wasn't just all fun and games anymore. There were now lawsuits that accompany comedy. So this was a new phenomenon that kind of started around maybe the past 2.5 decades ago. So you can like start to trace the line from the year 2000 to the present day. Increasingly, there were lawsuits against comedians, mostly on defamation, but sometimes on, how they even make the contracts to begin with. And then there were lawsuits about copyright infringement, joke stealing, and things like that. So, yeah, these are things that pertain to comedians. And then I also have a chapter in the book. Since this is a show, this show is not a comedy show. Your show is not a comedy show. So I have something that will be of interest to them, if the book covers the relationship between comedians and folks who are not comedians. Let's say folks who are members of the public, fans of comedy, or even people in romantic relationships with comedians. I mean, to be in a romantic relationship with a comedian is not like to be in a romantic relationship with a doctor. I mean, it's a whole different beast dealing with comedians. So, yeah, I have that coverage too in the book, one of the chapters where I cover how comedians relate to other folks who are not comedians. So the book is like a 360-degree coverage of things, both for the benefit of comedians and for the benefit of those who are not comedians, but who believe in free speech and those kinds of things. So, yeah, so he has that coverage there, too.
When a comedian makes a joke about somebody famous, and the person famous comes at them for defamation, or just shoots back. They don't actually go through the law per se. Like, I guess I'm just trying to figure out how protected are they? Because let's say Jimmy Kimmel, right? He had that issue with Aaron Rodgers, and it went back and forth. Did it go into court at all, though? I mean, are these things that have to go to court, or can they just fight it outside of court? And explain to me what that potential is. Like, would somebody go to jail for making jokes like this?
No, look, in America, for instance, if a comedian makes a joke about somebody, it's up to you how you decide to respond to that. You could either take it as a joke, hit back, in the form of a joke or some trash talk or whatever, if you want. Or you could sue the person. The example I give here, an example with Donald Trump, for instance. When Donald Trump, one of the cases I cover in the book was when Donald Trump sued Bill Maher, the comedian, over some joke Bill Maher made at Donald Trump's expense. He sort of like called Donald Trump an orange orangutan. You know, he said he would give him $5 million if he could prove that he wasn't the son of an orange orangutan and a human woman, you know. So, I mean, the context to that was when Donald Trump, said that Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States. When he said he would give him $5 million if he could produce his birth certificate to prove that he was born in the United States. So Bill Maher turned that around on Donald Trump at Jay Leno's show and said that if Donald Trump could prove that he wasn't the son of an orange orangutan and a human woman, that he would give him $5 million. You know, he said that the color of Donald Trump's hair and the color of an orange orangutan were the only two things in nature of the same color. So, it was like a joke he made on the show. Well, unexpectedly to a lot of people, Donald Trump turns around and sues him. Donald Trump produces his birth certificate and says, look, You made me a challenge. I am accepting the challenge. Here is my birth certificate. I was born in Queens. I am a human being, not part orange orangutan. So pay me $5 million. Well, people thought it was a joke, but Donald Trump wasn't joking. So there was a lawsuit in Los Angeles about this. But eventually, though, Bill Maher won because Donald Trump actually withdrew the lawsuit because he kind of sensed where things were going, that he wasn't going to be able to win that kind of suit. So he withdrew the lawsuit. But then, he made Maher cough up a lot of money for lawyers and things of that nature. But that's kind of how it works. You can always sue a comedian, but can you win? It's not easy to win against a comedian, especially in a place like America.
Do comedians have certain protective rights that kind of gives them a little bit more room to...
They have no more rights than you and I or anybody else in terms of what the First Amendment grants Americans, the freedom to speak and things of that nature. But the thing is, the average person who is walking about on the streets or who has a job somewhere isn't in the business of talking for a living, like comedians. Comedians talk for a living. And because they talk for a living, they are liable to offend people. And when they do that and they get sued, it becomes an opportunity for all of us to test the limits of free speech under the First Amendment. So what happens to a comedian and their free speech affects all the rest of us, too, because when they get sued, the law is explain to everybody, that, you can't say this or you can't say that. So, they sort of serve as our canary in the mine, so to speak, about what is allowed and what is not allowed when we are talking about free speech in a free society, in a democracy like America. So to answer your question, comedians do not have more rights than anybody else, but they are the people at the front lines of defending these rights of free speech and having all the rest of us understand where the contours are, where the lines are drawn with respect to free speech.
So what about the MyPillow guy? Is that something on comedy-ish? I mean, does that fall under that? The guy that told people if they could prove that the whole voting thing and the MyPillow guy, that the huge lawsuit where he owes this guy many millions because he proved that the voting machines weren't, in fact, defective, but he still hasn't paid up. Like, what happens with that?
Well, he's not a comedian, but, you know, that's just an ordinary lawsuit. That was defamation. Yes, he defamed, they found that he defamed those people. Like, you know, what he made was a statement of fact that the manufacturers of those voting machines, that they engaged in fraud. In other words, that they sort of rigged the election against, you know, Donald Trump. That kind of talk. And, of course, being a statement of fact, if that happens to be true, if members of the public believe that that kind of statement is true, then that would damage their business interests, the manufacturer's business interests. People may not want to purchase the machines again for voting activities and things of that nature. So, yeah, so you can see how that could damage the company that manufactures the voting machines. And if that happens to be a false statement of fact, because that was a statement of fact, that they manipulated the elections. Well, they either did or they didn't. Well, if they didn't and he said they did, then that turns out to be a false statement of fact. And then it damages their reputation and their business. So they will have a claim for defamation, if you know what I mean. So that's how
that
works. Yeah, so that's a different thing. But it's not the same thing as if he would have expressed his opinion that, you know, if he would have expressed an opinion about something, let's say the election, that he didn't think the election was fair, or that he didn't think the person who got elected should have been elected, that's just an opinion. But he did not express an opinion. He made a statement of fact, which happened to be false, and which also happened to damage somebody's business interest. So that's how that happened. But he's not a comedian, though. That's a separate thing altogether.
No, he's not. You know, when I think about the comedians, I mean, I think about people that are really big, like Joe Coy has kind of fallen under heat lately, with him hosting the Golden Globes, and he threw his team under the bus. I didn't do all the writing; it was just really fast. I feel like, I mean, you can really lose your career quickly by making a misstep.
Yeah, I mean, well, now you're talking about something different. Now, like, when we have comedy today, and, you know, comedy, they enjoy a lot of wiggle room to make, you know, comedians enjoy a lot of freedom to push their jokes, even if they push the boundaries and fence. The law protects them. But then, aside from the law, we also have the court of public opinion, where you have all this woke ideology and woke orthodoxy and all that stuff. And that's actually more of a threat to comedians than just the law itself. So a lot of times, you know, comedians could, like, say things that are legit within the law. They won't get in trouble. But then the court of public opinion says, no, you can't say this. We don't want this kind of joke anymore. You're oppressing people, you know. So, like, you know, the woke, what they call the woke ideology, woke intimidation and things like that. So, yeah, those things could actually become a problem for you, even though you can stay clear with the law. And, you know, for instance, under the Fourth Amendment, in America at least, you can make any kind of joke you want about rape, you know, about the Holocaust. You can be racist and things like that. And you'll be fine. It's Fourth Amendment, freedom of speech. But that's not where it ends. The Court of Public Opinion is a different place altogether. They can tell you, well, no, look, you know, we are going to counsel you, you know, this is such unacceptable stuff, you know, this is racist, we are not going to accept racist jokes or rape jokes, you know, so that's a whole different thing altogether. So the thing with Joe Coy, Yeah, he made all those jokes and things, man. But it didn't go over well, you know, with the people who are listening to him. And, you know, if he's not careful, first of all, nobody knows what impact he might have on his career. But, yeah, he could be damaged if they feel very strongly that he shouldn't be making that kind of joke. But in terms of the law, yeah, the law permits him to, you know, say those kinds of things, however offensive they might be. But, yeah, so that's where it is. And the biggest chapter in this book is this chapter on free speech, where I have things about, you know, Jerry Seinfeld and, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, Jay Leno, John Oliver, you know, many of the cases they got involved in. You know, like, you know, one of the cases, like, for Jerry Seinfeld that I discuss in this book, which really stresses this thing about free speech. Yeah, so the Seinfeld case was a case where he just didn't, but he was okay under the law, but, you know, people didn't think that what he did was fair, but that's just the way it is. And he did that on the Letterman Show.
Oh, wow. Okay. I do want to talk a little bit more about joke stealing, actually. But we got to take a quick commercial break. But don't worry, everybody. We're on with Carl Unegbu, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure, from outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscles' emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscles' emotion, then get Emily A. Francis' book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, the body heals itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself now.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing, and today is a different conversation. We're talking about Carl Unegbu's book, Comedy Goes to Court, When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. I guess there is a fine line between the laughing and the fighting, because it's very easy to offend to the point where you kind of, now you got to take some action. So you were just talking about Jerry Seinfeld. Tell me a little more about that situation.
Well, yeah, so Jerry Seinfeld, the back story here was that his wife, Jessica, she wrote a book one time about children's
cookbooks. The cooking.
Yeah, the cook, exactly. The children's cookbooks. So the book, somewhere along the line, some lady sued her about, you know, she sued her claiming that Jerry Sanford's wife, that she took the idea of the book from her. You know, there was copyright infringement kind of allegation. But anyway, so she sued Jerry Sanford's wife, Jessica. And then that woman lost. The person who sued her lost. Now, Jerry Sanford, you know, he was obviously pissed about that. That whole suit against his wife. But, you know, she won. So he goes on David Letterman's show. And then he starts to talk about this lawsuit against his wife. And then he begins to talk about the woman who sued his wife being a wacko, somebody who was unhinged, who was perhaps an assassin, you know, that the woman had three names, that people who had three names, you know, usually they end up as assassins, you know, if you look at history that he said, you know, he talked about James Earl Ray, the man who assassinated Martin Luther King Jr., and he also talked about Mark David Chapman. And these are like violent characters, you know, in the stories. So anyway, so he kind of made fun of this woman, you know, and people laughed and laughed and laughed. Now this woman turns around and sued Jerry Seinfeld for defamation, that she defended him on the David Letterman show. Well, anyway, eventually Jerry Seinfeld won because the court said, well, look, you know, this guy is a comedian. He's a well-known comedian, and they say he did was on a comedy show. Everybody understood that as a comedy show, that it was just like a joke or his opinion. But he didn't mean that anybody listening to Jerry Seinfeld would actually believe that the woman was an assassin. You know, that kind of thing. In other words, the court said, no, it's not a statement of fact. It's just a statement of opinion, a joke. Because, you know, like, when you sue somebody for defamation, you have to show that the people who heard what the person said or who read what the person said understood that as a statement of fact. And if that was a statement of fact, that it damaged your reputation. But if they didn't understand that as a statement of fact, then it couldn't have damaged your reputation. If they simply understood that as a joke or as an opinion, then it wouldn't damage your reputation. So the court said that people who watched the David Letterman show, that they couldn't have thought that Jerry Seinfeld was in fact talking that this woman was an actual assassin, you know, that kind of thing. So the court said, no, it's just an opinion. I guess my point is, it's difficult to get a comedian in America for things like defamation. Because, you know, they have special protection, like all the rest of us in America. We have a special protection from defamation lawsuits, thanks to the Fourth Amendment, for instance. So it's harder to win a defamation lawsuit here, especially against a public figure or a public official. Yes, so... So it's harder for them to win a defamation lawsuit, too. So, yeah, so that's kind of the way it works. So Seinfeld won that thing, but it's not always that a comedian would win. For instance, I mean, you could make a statement of fact. I mean, I don't know if some of your listeners come from Australia, but there was a case from Australia that I also mentioned in this book where somebody who was a comedian, Mick Molloy, he's one of the famous comedians in Australia. So he went on a show called, you know, Before the Game on Channel 10 in Australia. And then while he was on that show, he said something about a woman who was a politician in Australia. I think Nicole Cairns, you know, she was an MP. And then she was married to a football coach or something. And so this comedian said, you know, that she had an affair with a football player on her husband's team or something. And then she turns around and she sues him. And then, you know, he says, well, you know, she sues him, and then she sues at the television station, Channel 10. And then, you know, they tried to say, well, it was a joke, you know, just an opinion. The court said, no, it's not an opinion, it's a statement of fact. You know, the woman either had an affair or she didn't. And if she didn't, that was a false statement of fact, and it could damage her reputation in the community. I mean, she was a politician, for God's sake. So the court said, you know, this was defamation, even though this guy was a comedian, and he said the same on a funny, humorous show, but that it didn't matter, that this was a statement of fact anyway. So, yeah, those are the few sorts of circumstances in which a comedian could be found liable for defamation. If you go beyond just making a an opinion into making a statement of fact. And then if it happens to be false and it damages somebody's standing in the community, then, you know, you go down for it as liable.
So let's talk about joke stealing. How common is that?
It is common. It is very common in comedy. Very common. I mean, I remember something somebody said one time, David Brenner. He said, if we could, it's easier to stop a serial killer than to stop a joke thief. If we could accept our jokes, I'd be a billionaire somewhere today, you know, in Europe. That what I just said is original, quote and unquote. In other words, it's just so commonplace in comedy. He said it's easier to stop a serial thief than a serial, than a joke thief in comedy. And that is true. I mean, and it's easier now to steal jokes because there are more, many more forums where jokes are told. For instance, today you have social media, Twitter, and other places where people could now just, you know, render jokes. Previously, to get a joke, to have access to somebody's joke, you sort of have to watch the person at a comedy club performing, and then from there you can maybe steal the joke or something. But these days it's not the same thing. I mean, previously, you could steal a joke from somebody and you go to a different club and give the same joke, or you go to a different club and give the same joke to a different audience and they wouldn't know that you stole the joke. But these days it's different. If you steal a joke and put it on Twitter or any of these forums out there, you have a global audience. Everybody will know that this is the joke. And if you happen to be the first person to put the joke out there, then people will think that it's actually your joke. Or if you happen to have a larger microphone, a bigger microphone than the first person who made the joke, then people will give you credit for the joke and not the smaller profile person who originated the joke. Now, I give an example. My example
is... Give me an example right after the commercial break, because I don't want to get started and then have to interrupt. So let's take a quick commercial break and let's get the example when we come back.
Okay. It's about Conan O'Brien. So let's talk about it after the break.
Trauma or joy, shame or happiness, guilt or empowerment. Let Emily's new book, Healing Ourselves Whole, be the bridge to help you release negative emotions to help you heal on every level to create more joy, more health, and more vitality. Our body knows what we might forget. It's time to rearrange your inner conversation into spectacular health and happiness, and Healing Ourselves Whole is your step-by-step guide. Find out more at emilyafrancesbooks.com and buy Healing Ourselves Whole at Amazon.com now.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the best sellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscles' emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscles' emotion, then get Emily A. Francis's book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, The Body Heals Itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at emilyafrancesbooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself now.
The Bright Side of Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing, and today we're taking a little bit of a comedy break, though this isn't really funny stuff because it's comedy goes to court when people stop laughing and start fighting, which seems to be happening a lot around the world. We have an author on the show today. He wrote the book Comedy Goes to Court, When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. His name is Carl Unegbu, and that's U-N-E-G-B-U. So, Carl, before we jump into our final part of our interview, where can people buy your book?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for bringing that up. So, yeah, they could easily buy the book on Amazon, for instance. Comedy Goes to Court, When People Stop Laughing and Stop Fighting. Or they could ask for the book at their local bookstore.
Great.
Yeah, I do have a website, too. It's called ocalslaw.com, where I blog about comedy and the law and things of that. It's ocalslaw.com.
That's O, Carl's, with an S, law, dot com.
Yeah,
ocalslaw.com.
Yeah.
So
ocalslaw.com.
Let's jump back in, then. You were going to tell me a story about Conan O'Brien, so let's jump in there.
Oh, easily, yes. So it was a story where Conan, somebody wrote a joke on Twitter about the Washington Monument and shrinkage and stuff and the snow. And then in the evening, this happened in the morning, and then in the evening, Conan goes on his show and he makes the same joke. And then the person who made the joke on Twitter, who had a lower profile, then he turns around and sues Conan O'Brien and his producer for stealing his joke. He said he made the joke first on Twitter, and that Conan saw the joke on Twitter and then made the joke on his show, on his national show, later in the evening. So he sued Conan for joke stealing in comedy. Anyways, Conan said that he didn't steal the joke from him, that, you know, he was a man with a higher profile, he couldn't steal jokes and all that. The guy said, well, that's the problem, actually. I have a lower profile. Nobody knows me, but everybody knows you. So you took my joke, now everybody thinks you're the man who originated the joke. So that was kind of where the context was. But eventually, though, Conan just settled the case. You know, he didn't want to, you know, go along with the bad publicity around that kind of joke stealing offense. And yeah, so he settled. And then it's sort of like the same thing that happened with Michael Che on SNL. Same thing. Somebody makes a joke on TikTok, and then Michael Che makes the same joke on HBO. And then the TikTok woman sues Michael Che for taking her joke and publicizing the thing, making Michael Che look like he originated the joke. I mean, that was the other case I covered in the book. And then, so yeah, it's that kind of thing about, okay, so joke stealing, how do you prove all of that? Well, you kind of have to check it out in the book, how you get to prove joke stealing and all the controversies around joke stealing. But this carries some lessons for those of us who are not comedians in terms of what copyright infringement means. You know, they set the rules on copyright infringement about people who talk for a living and things like that. So how about us? So anyways, I guess my point is, since your audience are not comedians, this book has a lot of stories about all the funny things and the shenanigans and the adventures and misadventures that comedians engaged in than before they got in trouble with the law. So, I mean, if you sort of want to get a feeling of being at a comedy club, taking in a show, or watching a roast on Comedy Central, or, you know, watching a comedy special on Netflix, yeah, this book can sort of give you that kind of feeling about actually watching a fun show. And it's a good book for the park or for, you know, the mall or wherever you like to hang out, you know, because as they say, comedy is the most fun you can have with your clothes on. So, I mean,
yes.
So that's the first part, the first reason to read the book. The next reason is the other serious business about the rest of us, what we can or cannot say in a free society. If comedians lose, we lose too, because what the law is that applies to them applies to the rest of us too. And, I mean, you can guess that that's where the title of my book comes from, When People Stop Laughing and Start Fighting. You know, so we're talking about the place where the law now reigns on the parade of comedians and their freedom. You know, what can they do? What cannot they do? and that affects the rest of us too. So, yeah, those are two reasons to at least read the book if somebody's not a comedian. Of course, if one is a comedian, it's a must read. And if one is not a comedian, it's a should read, as they say. So, that's what I want to leave your listeners with. You know, the
that's great.
Point of reading the book.
Let me ask you one more question. If there's a comedian and they have a team of writers, and one of the people on the writing team stole somebody else's joke, but the person, the famous person delivering the jokes, doesn't know that the joke was stolen, how does this play out?
Oh God, what a wonderful question! You see, it kind of plays into the thing in the Conan O'Brien lawsuit, because Conan has a team that writes for him, a big writing team. Because he's a major comedy superstar. He has a writing team that writes his jokes. So people were like, well, how did this guy's joke get into Conan's... How did he get into Conan's hand? This guy's joke on Twitter. Because the guy actually had the joke put on Twitter. How did Conan come up with the joke? Then people were saying, well, it could have been somebody on his writing team that took the joke.
Right.
You know, that was the speculation there. Because if you know anything about comedy, the late night show, they have writing teams, and this environment is very competitive. They compete against each other as well as against other shows, other many late night shows out there. So the competition is very stiff. So it's possible that people on the writing teams could have taken a joke from somewhere, and then the boss, you know, the superstar that, you know, owns the show, may not know that the writing team took the joke from somewhere. So that's the whole thing that came out in the Conan O'Brien situation. But O'Brien said, well, he's going to settle the suit, not because he was liable or anything, but that he didn't want any more embarrassment with this, you know. So he kind of wanted to settle the case for that reason, you know, because it may have been somebody on his writing team that stole the joke, but it wasn't proven. So that's kind of like, yeah, it sort of ties into the question you asked. You know, what if somebody on the writing team of a famous comedian, you know, stole the joke from somewhere without the famous comedian knowing about it? Well, in that case, you'll still be liable for the stealing of the joke because, you know, your writing team, they write for you. So everybody is ultimately responsible on the team. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. Because you don't really realize... When you watch shows, you know that there's a team of writers. But when you watch a stand-up comedian, I think a lot of people assume that they write their own material. Because it takes years to actually build a team, right?
Yeah, not the big time. I mean, if you went to a comedy club and you saw a comedian performing, he probably wrote his own joke. But if you see like somebody with a national profile, a late-night show host, Jimmy Kimmel, you know, Jimmy Fallon, Jay Leno, David Letterman, those kinds of guys, Conan O'Brien, they have writing teams. Bill Maher, John Oliver, they have huge writing teams, like a team of writers who craft the jokes for them. And then our people on The Daily Show, they have writing teams too there. So, yeah, that's how it works, John Oliver. Yeah, so that's how it works. They have writing teams, and if a team member steals a joke, well, the comedy superstar they write for, he ultimately will be responsible for that violation.
Oh, thank you. Carla Negbu, you guys can go and buy Comedy Goes to Court when people stop laughing and start fighting. Thank you for being on the show. Emily's Energy Corner is coming up next.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
If you have low vision or are blind, then listen up. There's now high visibility trendy sports clothing available just for you. At AwareWolfGear.com, you'll find attractive, stretchy, warm hoodies, headgear, leggings, even kids' wear to fit the duality of blindness, the need to be seen without drawing needless attention. Check out these trendy clothes for yourself or for someone you know at AwareWolfGear.com. That's AwareWolfGear.com. AwareWolfGear.com.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Emily's Energy Corner time. And it's been a while since I've done this part by myself, but I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the time to get to talk off the cuff. This particular show is different than what we usually focus on for healing, but I love comedy. I'm a huge fan of comedy, actually. And comedy going to court, I think, is important. And I'll tell you a personal story. I was scrolling through Instagram one day, and there was a person that really admired one of my books, The Body Heals Itself. And they had done a thing on, they love these top five healing books, and they put all of our books. And I was so proud and pleased. But then a few weeks later, I'm looking at the same person's Instagram, and they have all these rolls of quotes, and they are straight word for word out of my book. But my name is nowhere on these quotes, nowhere. And it basically looks like this person is offering this up because they're like a life coach or some sort of wellness coach. And so they had all of these things. And I literally pulled my book out because I thought, my gosh, that is really smart information. And the more I started reading, I thought, that's my information. That sounds exactly like me. And so then I opened up my book, and it was word for word, not a single word changed. And it was like, you know how on Instagram they can do like one page and you swipe and another and you swipe and another and another. And it was all from my book, from my writing. And there was not one iota of credit for me or for my book. And all these commenters are like, oh, you're so smart. What a great thing to say. You're so wise. And so I reached out to them because they had asked me to interview on their show and be a guest on their show. And so I reached out nicely and I said, I'm so honored that you would write things from my book, but could you please add my name, maybe the book, when you do this? Can you tag me in it? Can you put my name on these? Because right now it looks like you wrote it, which means if somebody got a hold of my book, they're going to think I copied you. Nobody's going to know the difference of which order this came in. And I could lose my full credibility because you've decided to use this in your coaching, but not give me the credit. And so that was actually one of the things that made me want to learn a little bit more about plagiarism and defamation and things like that, because, you know, if somebody doesn't know me, because I'm not a very well-known person in any of the fields, I'd love to say I am, but let's be honest, you know, and then this person is so active on social media. They've really built up their platform. And all of a sudden, somebody could see something that I do and think, I'm a hack. When I've been giving 25 years straight to my area of expertise. And in a minute, it could be stolen. just like that, and somebody think I'm the one copying instead of the one writing. It's something to think about because we do it all the time, I think. I mean, everything is a reimagination of something you saw before. There's really not new things. It's the way that we see it that makes it new. It gives it a new edge. It gives it a new understanding and a new vision. But everything has already been out there. It's just how we perceive and how we can share it with the world. And that was a big deal to me. And it's pretty heartbreaking. I didn't think that, you know, I see a lot of people with fake profiles, and I often wonder what makes them be the target. Why is somebody trying to be them? You know, but then when you're quoting people's books or their work and their writing, it's pretty devastating, and it's pretty wonderful if somebody does it and they credit you. So that's my soapbox for that part, because I do think that's important, really important. So I'm here in Malta, and I'm still loving my life over here in the Mediterranean, for anyone who was wondering. I'm in year 4 over here, and I still look around, truly. Today, my freesia plants are blooming, and I showed a video the other day on Facebook of these gorgeous purple freesia flowers, but today the yellow ones are coming up, and, you know, somebody, oh gosh, somebody was like, it's like you've never seen a tree before. And it's so funny to me because until you live in places where your food grows on or near you, where you can actually get near it and see it, the appreciation level is just not the same. And right now, the almond trees are starting to come out. The husks are coming, the fuzzy, fuzzy husk of the almond. But it's really amazing to me. Here's something that I love. You can have things planted 5 feet away from each other, 10 feet away. But the way the sun hits it, one will grow much sooner, not faster or heavier, whatever, just sooner. One sprouts before the other. And it's timing. It's always timing. It's just interesting to me that I have two plants side by side of freesia, yet the purple has been in bloom for 3 weeks now, and the yellow is just coming up. Why? I'm assuming it's the way that they hit the sun. I have now my 4 olive oil trees, but only one right now is growing the flowers for next year, and you cannot imagine how many olives I'm going to have on that tree. But the other ones are not in the same location facing the sun quite the same way, even though they all have access, and they're taking a little bit slower of a time to bloom. But I think that's important for all of us to take it into life, that we all have our times to bloom, to ebb and flow, and to find our happiness, and timing is a thing that's been making me crazy for a long time. Respecting the time sounds really good until you're ready for something to hit. And then respecting the time becomes excruciating. Because, I don't know, don't you wish sometimes you had a magic wand where spirit can say, look, it is happening. Like, I know the New Age philosophies say it's already happened and now you just have to give thanks and then you work your way up until it happens. But sometimes that's not the case. Although I have to say I had a meeting this week to pull something into real life that I have had many meetings over in the last 3 years with many different people and many different opportunities, and they always fell through. And this one feels like it's happening, and I hope that that's true. But until things are written and contracted by law, then they're always in the middle part. And I have to respect that timing, but it's really hard. It's really hard. And sometimes when the timing doesn't work for you, you put it away and you just go, you know what, I guess this one's just not in the cards for me. And so when something like this comes back around, which is what's happening for me right now, I didn't go looking for it this time, which is pretty cool. There's something that I've been wanting to do here in Malta based on the articles that I write. And for 3 years, I've met with different publishers over here and I've tried to put it together, and you know, people say yes, and then they won't put it in a contract, and they don't back it up. And, you know, the first meeting I had was, we don't do contracts, we shake hands, and then we shook hands, and then the dude changed his mind 2 weeks later and didn't even have the cojones to come and tell me himself, and had his assistant tell me. You know, people are just not honorable the way that you hope that they are. And so I put it away. I decided, like, I'm just kind of done, and I'm going to pivot. But I'm going to pivot. But a couple weeks ago, I was on a school field trip, of all places, and the other parent there happens to be a publisher. And I didn't know that. So while I'm telling the story, they then say, you know, I'm a publisher. So we've been having meetings. I can't wait to fill you in, though, but I won't until I'm legally bound and contracted. All with the comedy goes to court, but this won't be a comedy. Anyway, I hope that was a fun little insightful energy corner. Please feel free to shoot me an email. Be in touch. EmilyAFrancis@gmail.com. You guys have been listening to All About Healing. Make it a great week.
Emily A. Francis offers you a unique approach to healing that works directly within the memory systems of your body. Healing Ourselves Whole is a groundbreaking interactive book containing everything you need to clean your emotional house from top to bottom, including journal prompts and audio meditations, all to help you dig deep into your past, change the dialogue, and let go of the pain and trauma to have a joyful and fully empowered life. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com and buy Healing Ourselves Whole at Amazon.com now.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.